This program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Dex Media, striving to be the most complete, up-to-date source for information in the book, on CD-ROM, or online at dexonline.com.
Listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. Today is Monday, October 31st, 2005. It is approximately 7:38 a.m. You are listening to More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. This morning we have the opportunity for you to share a commentary and to share your thoughts. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let me give you those numbers again. You can write them down and give us a call. 503-231-8187. Today is Monday, October 31st, 2005. And in case you did not know, it was confirmed that today is Halloween. How did I know? Well, I woke up this morning and heard that the president nominated Samuel Alito for Supreme Court Justice. The president has certainly responded to his conservative backers by nominating one of the most conservative jurists on the Court of Appeals. Samuel Alito is a based in Philadelphia, the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court. He has served on the Federal Appeals Court for 15 years and has been known as a strong conservative voice. He has been nicknamed, the president had said that he wanted nominees in the who are like Scalia and Thomas. He has been nicknamed as Scalia Light. He's very intelligent, conservative advocate for his position, although, from what I've read, he is a bit more polite than Judge Scalia. So that's what we have in store for this nation. October 31st, Halloween, and we have quite something from the president. Celeste, are you near here yet?
Oh, I'm swimming along.
Okay.
Swimmingly along.
Well, hopefully that you are focusing on your driving and not on telephone talking.
But that's the beauty of hands-free. Though I must say, I think the traffic is extra bad today, not just because it's raining, which can be an anathema to many Portland drivers. But I suspect there's a lot of people who forgot to set their clocks back. And they're wandering around in, you know, some kind of chronological days here. Not quite sure what time it is because folks are making some interesting choices here about traffic and driving.
Okay, well, you focus on driving and we'll see you when you get here.
All right, wonderful.
Okay. In the meantime, if you have announcements for events, please make sure that you send them to us here at KBOO, and we will certainly announce those that are of interest. Again, let me just remind you, those of you who are waking up, you may have heard that a lot of things have been happening in the nation capital in the last few days. Last Thursday, I believe, Harriet Myers resigned or said that she would not seek confirmation for the U.S. Supreme Court. In the meantime, a prosecutor made a case against the chief of staff of the vice president of the United States, accusing that person of perjury in the Valerie Plame case. And today, this morning, the president announced the nomination of Samuel Alito to take the seat that is currently held by a retiring Supreme Court justice. So, Mr. Alito seems to be quite an interesting fellow, and I just was able to get up a few facts about this person, and I'll share them with you in case you have not had the opportunity. He has served on the Federal Appeals Court for 15 years. George H.W. Bush appointed him in 1990. Prior to that, he was U.S. Attorney for the District of New Jersey from 87 to 90. And who his first assistant as a lawyer was Michael Chertoff, who is now the Homeland Security Secretary. So interesting way in which one hand washes the other. He's from New Jersey, has deep roots in New Jersey. On the bench, he is thought to be probing, more polite than the often sarcastic Anthony Scalia, to whom he has often been compared. He is 55 years old, and so if confirmed, will sit there for possibly for the next 30 years or so. In this article, it says that his noteworthy opinions was his lone dissent in the 1991 case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, in which the Third Circuit struck down a Pennsylvania law that included a provision requiring women seeking abortion to notify their spouses. So he dissented against that case. In 2000, however, he joined the majority that found a New Jersey law banning late-term abortion unconstitutional. In a concurring opinion, Alito said the Supreme Court required such a ban to include an exception if the mother's health was in danger. On spousal notification law, Alito wrote the Pennsylvania legislature could have rationally believed that some married women are initially inclined to obtain an abortion without their husband's knowledge because of perceived problems, such as economic constraints, future plans, or the husband previously expressed opposition. This may be obviated by discussion prior to the abortion, so said Judge Alito in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1991. The Supreme Court in the 63 ruling, struck down the spousal notification, but William Rehnquist, who was then Chief Justice, quoted from Alito opinion in his dissent. In 1999, the Fraternal Order of Police versus the City of Newark, the Third Circuit ruled 3-0 that Muslim police officers in the city can't keep their beards. The police had made an exemption in his facial hair policy for medical reasons, a skin condition, but not for religious reason. A leader wrote the opinion saying, "We cannot accept the department position that there is a different treatment of medical exemption and religious exemption." So in that case, he ruled in favor, he ruled against a law which made it illegal or impossible for a Muslim police officer to wear a beard. Other rulers, in 2004, the Third Circuit Court ruled that a Pennsylvania law prohibiting student newspaper from running ads for alcohol was unconstitutional. Judge Alito said the law violated the First Amendment rights of the student newspaper, the Pitts News from the University of Pittsburgh. He stated in his opinion, if government were free to suppress disfavored speech by preventing potential speakers from being paid, there would not be much left of the First Amendment. I know in coming days and weeks there will be more about Samuel Alito, but I thought you might want to know about the next Supreme Court nominee on this day, October 31st, 2005. Again, our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. This is Small Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. We invite your calls and commentary. We're going to ask you to speak precisely, shortly. Please keep your comments to 2 or 3 minutes so that we can get other callers on the air as well. We'll go to our first caller, and thank you for waiting. Good morning.
Hello, I have a couple of questions, whether they can be answered or not. Rosa Parks, I'm glad they're paying, honoring her, but I'm just wondering if that's a ploy to soften us for something terrible going to happen in this country. And another thing, since we can't seem to put healthy-minded and spirited people on the Supreme Court, I would like to ask this of anybody or anyone who considers themselves a legal expert, do we really need the Supreme Court if we don't put healthy-minded and spirited people on? They will, as far as I'm concerned, will only do damage to the country. Okay.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. The caller mentioned two topics. One, Rosa Parks, who is breaking tradition by being the first woman honored to lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda, I believe today and tomorrow. And she posed the question whether or not it is an attempt to cover up some malfeasance in the government. Some of us continue to be cynics of the powers that be. Be that as it may, the fact that she is being honored this way is a call for those who want to keep alive the tradition and not to allow it to be sugarcoated, to make sure that the true story of the modern human rights movement is known and that is not sugarcoated. So I guess the best way to honor Rosa Parks and the countless hundreds of thousands of nameless brave individuals is to keep the struggle to keep the memory, and more importantly, to keep the legacy of the human rights struggles alive. Your second point was around the Supreme Court and those who are nominated. Not being a legal expert, I don't even play one on TV. I think I remembered from my high school civic class that the United States government is set up in such a way to make sure that there is balance. So we have three pieces of the government, the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judiciary. Each one is independent and separate, and to keep an eye on one and another. So if one of the three legs of the stools is somehow uneven, I think our whole society, or what we hope to create in terms of a system, begins to collapse. So rather than, I would suggest, rather than nominating those who are less qualified for the Supreme Court, that we should look for those, the best qualities, and those who are appointed to the judiciary, as well as those who are elected and appointed to serve in the executive and in the legislative branches of government.
I think we should also exercise our citizen right for dissent and let our elected officials know what our thoughts are on the candidates as well.
And that you are listening to Cecil and Celeste, and Celeste is actually live in studio at this moment.
Having swum upstream with all the rest of the amphibious lemmings, let's say it that way. You know, I wanted to say something about Rosa Parks. I saw this coverage on network news this morning about Rosa and how they were honoring her in Washington, D.C. But I'm really a little, I don't know if I should say piqued or fatigued or both, at the way that her civil disobedience is portrayed. Time and time again, it's cited as though she had just reached the end of her rope and there it was, without giving any support, any validation, any statement of the fact that this was a carefully calculated act. This was not a woman who was not aware of what she was doing, and along with her group that was working to do the protest that offered her the support, they did their due diligence and studied interstate trucking
laws. Well, it is very interesting, as the caller suggested, that we, and as you so eloquently stated, in terms of looking at the true history of, mm-hmm. of the human rights movement, I thought it was interesting that, as you suggested, that Mrs. Parks was an activist who had been taking training in civil disobedience,
mm-hmm.
Who was arrested for a similar act in 1946, and was a secretary of the NAACP.
The NAACP, that's right.
And one story I heard that that, you know, she was on her way to NAACP
mm-hmm.
meeting that evening. So she may have been tired, but in the words of Fannie Lou Hamer,
mm-hmm.
she was tired of, she was sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Oh, yeah.
And that the struggle was not just, oh, I just happened to not move this day.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it may not have been calculated. I don't know what was in her mind, that this is the day mm-hmm. I'm going to
right,
protest.
Right.
But I think it was calculated in uh-huh. such that it was a movement where people did a lot of research in
uh-huh.
terms of looking at the laws in several cities throughout the states in terms of interstate commerce and also laws within the municipalities
uh-huh.
and that in many places people were taking similar actions. I think it might be helpful to remember that a few months before Rosa Parks was arrested for this act of civil disobedience, that a young woman in the spring of 1955 made a similar stand.
Or not sit. Not get up. Uh-huh.
And she was a very bright young woman, very intelligent. And,
uh-huh.
and so the activists thought that she might become the focus point
uh-huh.
of the movement at that time. Unfortunately for her, and maybe it was a sign of the time, this young woman was a young woman and she was unmarried and she was pregnant.
A mother, right.
And so they thought that she may not be the right person to
uh-huh.
be the focal point of that protest. But then again, that just reminds us that the movement has a long history of many people, many unnamed people
who have come together.
And Rosa Parks,
mm-hmm.
In some ways, becomes a symbol.
She became a cultural icon, mm-hmm. and then also, like you said, with an eye on the times, people might wonder, well, why would you not pick a woman who was young and intelligent and spunky just because she was an unwed mother? And it goes to show how much a lot of actions by a group can be put on the stage, especially minorities. And so you find this pressure sometimes to line up all the ducks to make it as an effective act as possible. And you're right, that was a sign of the times to a degree. In some ways, it's still a sign of the times.
You're listening to Board Talk Radio. It is actually 7:54. It's not 8:54.
It's not 8:54. Okay, so this is the one day when if you're supposed to be at work at 9 o'clock, you're okay. It's not 8:54. Stop rushing and cutting people off and driving unsafely in wet weather. Yeah.
Mm. Well, it sounds like as mm-hmm. if you have some personal experience about that.
Well,
morning.
You know, on one hand, My whole thing is I'm going to try to take my time because I like to get where I'm going. And that might sound a little oxymoronic, but you can set out and not arrive on time. You know, there's lots of things that can delay you. So if you're listening to KBOO at 90.7 or 91.9 or 100.7 on your car radio, I do hope you're paying attention to the road as well. You know, don't shake your fist at what we say or, you know, or do the high five or whatever, but, you know, keep those hands on the wheel.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio. We're opening up the phone lines for your thoughts and comments about activities that have been happening in your community, in the nation, in the world. As we noted, that there's been several monumental events that has happened in the last few days. One thing we did not denote early was that last week there were protests or memorials, I would like to say, and recognizing the death of the 2000th U.S. military person in the war in Iraq. Many people in this community and communities throughout the world stood in solidarity with those who have lost loved ones and also with those who have been injured in that war. Including in the activities we mentioned was the stepping down of Harriet Myers, the indictment of the Chief of Staff of the Vice President of the United States, and today the nomination of a conservative jurist to take the seat in the U.S. Supreme Court. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. It's approximately 7:56. We invite your calls, and you'll have about 2.5-3 minutes, and we'll give you a little warning when your time is about up.
Yeah, a little warning before we say goodbye. And so we'll go to our next caller. Thank you for your patience. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I am fine. I'm a little soggy around the edges, but I'm fine. How about yourself?
Well, I just want to comment about the Supreme Court. First, I think we need to remember that there's nothing in the Constitution. It is Marbury versus Madison, which makes the Supreme Court the final arbiter about what is constitutional. You might go back and read what Thomas Jefferson, because this was an attempt by the Federalist Party to assert ultimate control over the government. And so the idea that is often taught, and I've taught American government and talked about that same thing, but I really think that that's one of the biggest problems is the whole Marbury versus Madison case. If you want me to explain the case.
Well, why don't you explain it? Was it at 1803? What was it?
1803. This concerned a judicial appointment for a justice of the peace in the District of Columbia, which had been done by President John Adams, and it was to be delivered by Marshall, who was the Secretary of State and the Chief Justice at the same time, by the way. And he failed to do that. Thomas Jefferson ordered his Secretary of State, who was James Madison, to not deliver it. So Marbury sued, arguing that the Secretary of State, Mr. Madison, had a ministerial duty to deliver.
Yes.
And so on the first two points, Marbury won, but then Marshall ruled that a clause in the act which created the power of the had been violated, and that could not be enforced so that Marbury lost, but that created the principle that the Supreme Court was the final authority about what was constitutional.
Yes.
And that is not when the Constitution can find no language which, and contrary to what Bork and his friends say, that the only thing that our so-called constitutional fathers, quote and unquote, agreed on was the words in the Constitution. Because if you read various comments from various people who were there, you will get disagreement. So the only thing you can say they agreed on was the words in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a great coup. If you think about all the way coming down, is the ultimate arbiter is the Supreme Court, which was not set up that way to do that.
What do you think about in terms of some conservative jurists who say that they talk about strict reading of the Constitution? That's what the president and some of his supporters are saying, that you shouldn't have the judicial activists to look at the original intent. Is that accurate?
No, because they're always, anytime you rule any way that you're being a activist,
mm-hmm.
that's the problem. Because when you decide one way, you rule against the other side. So there's no such real thing, because the Constitution to me, and I used to teach constitutional law, by the way, is specifically vague and vaguely specific. Now, if you take some concept like due process, if we were to hold a trial as they would have held it in at the time of the writing of the Constitution, even the most right-wing people would scream all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
These terms change with times, because words, as we all know, change over time in their meaning and what people expect. And everything always has to be in some way with the context of the time. If you try to hold on something rigid, then it has to be amended and it has to be changed. To me, the genius of the United States Constitution is its built-in flexibility, because it talks about principles, doesn't give a series of rules about how to do things. It gives principles about how this can be done.
In other words, it creates a frame of reference for critical thinking and decision making, but doesn't delineate specifically what the choices should be.
And that's exactly the way I read it. And when you try to turn it into a straitjacket or even as the current Chief Justice argued, well, he's just an umpire. Well, that's not what the Constitution is about. It's a framework in which problems can be solved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I read the Constitution, and I've spent quite a bit of time over the years, and this idea about a Constitution being in exile has to forget all about the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the United States Constitution, the so-called Civil War one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that the Supreme Court, through most of its history, has been reactionary.
Well, you know, you've raised some points, and unfortunately, we do have some other callers which are going to bump you. Thank you so much for your call and your history lesson.
Thank you very much.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio, 503-231-8187, and we'll go to our next caller. Good morning.
Hey, this is Chuck.
Hello, Chuck.
That guy was an interesting caller, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
And I'm calling also about a Supreme Court case that's kind of interesting, and about mixing ideologies, because are you guys aware of the Raich case out of California? Raich versus the Drug Enforcement Agency?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Well, that's the one where this was she was a medical cannabis user, and the federal government insisted that they have the authority to enforce their federal law against cannabis over the state law, which says medical cannabis users are free mm-hmm. to use cannabis, provided they're not selling it or transporting it to sell and all of that stuff.
Right.
And it was an overwhelming, and this, I think, has a parallel to the remarks that the prior caller was making about the reach of the Supreme Court, and that, because I'm a states' right guy, provided the states are respecting human rights. That's why I support federal troops going into Arkansas and telling the social fascist governor of Alabama that, no, you don't get to separate people out and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but on the other hand, I support California's and Oregon freedom to tell the federales that they're overreaching and that they ought to lay off.
Well, and Chuck, let me ask you this, given the fact that we've got some time constraints here.
Okay, just here's let me make my point. And the point is that I found myself ideologically on the same side as Clarence Thomas, of all people,
mm-hmm.
who I don't think is a very great scholar, and I think he should probably have been refused for his lack of scholarship as a Supreme Court justice. But in any case, he says if the federal government can regulate California cannabis people, and the grounds is just because the fact that it enters existence, marijuana enters existence, it can potentially be sold across state lines, therefore the feds have say-so. Now, Thomas said, I disagree. He was basically coming down saying that the feds are overreaching, and if they can regulate such a speculation, something so speculative, then they can be regulating toilet paper. And I thought he was reasonable in his analysis, and that's all I want to say, is that here I am, there's a left...
Unfortunately, we ran out of time, because what I wanted to ask was if you had any overarching framework by which you balance being a federalist versus state rights, but you made a good point, and we're running out of time.
Okay, it's a human rights thing. That's the overarching principle.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Chuck, for your call. And you're listening to KVOO, your community connection. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. And we've been discussing both the validity of the Supreme Court as the final arbiter of our legislation in this country, the framework in which it's to be as opposed to the, the interpretive straitjacket. Is that kind of grab it properly? Yeah.
Helpful.
And then decisions about federalism versus states' rights, you know, and how a balancing act can be achieved and under what rubric.
And today is October 31st, 2006.
2006.
2005.
I set my clock back, not my calendar up. I'm not giving up a year.
not a year yet.
No, not ever, if I can help it.
So in the meantime, before I make note of one other interesting fact about this day, let's go to our next caller.
Good morning.
Who's calling us?
Hello.
Hello.
I would like to offer a somewhat less hallowed view of the original intent of the framers of the Constitution and of the documents they produced.
Okay, so you're saying you want to offer a somewhat less what kind of view?
Hallowed. That's hallowed. I don't do it as a holy piece of mythology that
mm-hmm.
makes America next to godliness. Okay, that when they... But beyond legalizing slavery, beyond protecting the speculators who brought up the Revolutionary War debt, neither the Senate nor the presidency was directly elected by the people. And there's no statement of who or who not is not the electorate, which was left up to the states, who were pretty careful to limit it at that point, and the expansion of all these pieces of power going out to the people have only come about as the oligarchy has become confident of its ability to manipulate.
Okay, let me make sure I can get this right. You were saying basically that the only reason, and I'm condensing it quite a bit, that the only reason we're getting the rights that we got now is not due to any effort of the judiciary or the legislative bodies, the electorate, but just because the ruling class, the oligarchy, has decided that they feel confident enough to give us some pseudo rights because they can continue to manipulate us a lot better in other ways.
And the fact that they appear to have given us these rights makes a whole lot of people think that now they have a stake in the government, and that makes it easier to manipulate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so since we think we have a stake in the government, we're easier to manipulate.
Yeah, and that a lot of the expansion after World War One, and especially after World War Two, up until Vietnam, was the growth of the empire meant that they needed to expand the number of people in America who felt like they had some investment in that empire.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as the U.S.'s ability to manipulate the whole world is going to contract, their interest in giving us a stake in the whole thing is going to start contracting down to fewer and fewer people. And yeah, we're going to fight, but they're going to fight a lot more viciously, too, and don't count on us winning.
Well, that's a good point, and I want to thank you for your call. So, basically, even if we can see behind the curtain,
mm-hmm.
it really doesn't matter because we can see, but we can't affect.
We can't affect.
Yeah.
One earlier point that the caller made was just an observation in terms of the Constitution. Again, it just reminds us that as originally constructed and continues today, that the electorate does not directly elect the President of the United States,
mm-hmm.
and up until the into the 20th century, I believe, or late 19th century, there was not a direct election onto U.S. Senate by the people. So again, we never existed a pure democracy, at best maybe a representative form
mm-hmm.
of government. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. You're listening to KBOO. This is Monday, October 31st, 2005, and also known as Halloween. But also for those who are concerned about resistant authority, today is the day that Martin Luther nailed 95 theses on the Wittenberg Cathedral to challenge the ruling authorities to have a debate about issues that affected people. So,
you know, I just had a little structure breakdown. Now, you said 95 theses, and for some reason, all this time in my life, I've been carrying them as the treatises.
Oh.
Is it theses or treatises?
Well, I say theses, you say
and I'm trying to remember, where in the world did I pick that up? It's kind of like all this time I still knew what the substance was.
Yeah.
You know, a rose is still a rose if you call it a cauliflower. But, you know, the point being that, you know, it's kind of like realizing that for years you've been singing the wrong words to the song, but the words you had still meant the same thing.
That's
it meant the same thing. It just wasn't the words that were literally in the song. Okay.
We can investigate that. Was it a treatise or was it a thesis?
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is I had a really wicked thought here when you were talking about the type of democracy we have and the votes that we have, and at best it was representative, and I was thinking, well, you know, there was a point in our electoral process where we actually had some proportional representation during the time of slavery when slaves counted as three-fourths of a person?
Three-fifths.
Three-fifths, excuse me. So that's proportional representation. That's ugly. Ugly, but true.
Living in America.
Hey.
Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, and thank you for waiting. Good morning.
Good morning. Yep, that's you. Pick up the hands free.
Oh, good morning. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. I'd like to acknowledge your efforts to be a little bit more precise in limiting the time that callers spend on the phone, and commend you for that. But I think you can do a lot better job. Thank you.
Okay, you still have 2 minutes.
Yeah, so.
No, I just call for that purpose.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, you can't call and just spank. You have to eliminate. What's up with that? Come on. Oh, we lost the caller. Dog, I was ready to engage and have him drop a nugget of knowledge, you know.
Well, perhaps our next caller will do that. Good morning, caller, and thank you for waiting.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm glad to hear you mention Rosa Parks this morning. Her contribution is really very important. So I learned something yesterday in church that I didn't know. excuse me. And that is that when she sat down, she originally sat in the colored section. And then as the bus filled up, the driver came and moved the marker.
Right.
Two rows back. And so
which was a common practice.
Right. And the thing is three other people got up and moved.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosa Parks did not move. And so many times these days when we talk to our coworkers or friends, family members, what can I do? And it's, you know, that one thing that she did do was she really did do something by just that one action. So I think it's important to remember that and to take actions. And so there was also the thing about the last shall be first and the first shall be last, et cetera. Can I throw in one announcement, please, I think is kind of an important on a somewhat related subject?
Certainly.
Tomorrow from 6:30 to 8:30 at Emmanuel Temple Community Center, Emmanuel Temple Church there at 1032 Northeast Sumner Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one you can see from the freeway between Killingsworth and Alberta. Mayor Potter is inviting you all to a community meeting on drug-free and prostitution-free zones and the policy whereby the cop gets to arbitrarily short-circuit the judicial process and exclude somebody from the neighborhood that they or their mother lives in or whatever.
Well, there's actually a judicial process. It doesn't actually have to go that far, but it's still an opportunity for the community to come and get their questions answered.
Yeah, and that's at Emmanuel Temple, 1032 North Sumner Street.
And what time is that again?
6:30 to 8:30 tomorrow.
Okay.
All righty.
November 1st, Tuesday.
All righty. Thank you so much for that announcement.
And as we continue, we'll go to our next caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
And our numbers here are 503-231-8187. You're listening to More Talk Radio with Celeste and Cecil. Today is October 31st, 2005. And did I get it right?
You got it right. I just was chuckling at the hesitation.
I was looking
at the engineer. He was throwing his hands up, and it was not the kick is good signal. It was more like the call just, it just went to the ether.
Ooh, it is Halloween. Let's try it again. Good morning,
okay.
Caller.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to know from my fellow listeners and you all, what are your reasons for not having, let's call them red light districts or a red light district, such as is had in Amsterdam, for instance, where people who, the Drug Society and the Prostitution John Society, could go and live in peace and hopefully in peace and harmony, since they won't have all of these restrictions on them, and the other neighborhoods can be without them.
Well,
why not?
Well, you know, the first reason is just the fact that it's illegal in this country, and so you have to pass that hurdle first.
Uh-huh, sure.
And it's probably going to be a difficult climb just because it flies counter to a lot of cultures' values, regardless of their spiritual affiliation. You bring up a point. You know, I had this discussion with someone last week, and my whole answer revolved around a difference in the cultural mind. I really think that culturally, just like in some cultures, they have a better attitude toward, say, alcohol, because a lot of the mysticism and the taboo against it has been removed because it's put in its proper context. The same reason why in some cultures the law enforcement can walk among people and keep order without carrying guns. We lack a certain attitude that would allow us to have a district where you could indulge in certain practices without going overboard. We're not that kind of, we don't have that kind of mentality. And I need more than 2 minutes to really kind of qualify that, just to say that we have a different mentality in this country about how we indulge in things. Case in point, credit. We go overboard. And the powers that be, the advertisers, take advantage of certain aspects of our mentality here to keep us moving in that direction, you know, to keep us as a consumer nation.
Well, I think over a longer period of time, we all should discuss these things.
And I think you brought up a great point.
Yeah, thank you.
Uh-huh.
One other point that's in reference to the caller's question in terms of a so-called red light district, and I assume that he was focusing on, like, drugs and...
Right, drugs and prostitution.
And prostitution.
Uh-huh.
But one thing unique about Oregon is Oregon's constitution,
uh-huh.
free speech constitution. So, therefore, a lot of people always wonder, why do you have, like, strip clubs can be, you know, next door to your elementary school.
It's or why we have so many. We have more than any other state.
Because the Oregon free speech free speech status in the Constitution is broader than the federal U.S. Constitution. So another interesting fact about the times we live in.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you can have adult bookstores within the 1,000-foot radius of a school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of studies that would say that's not a good idea, but we have one because we have legislated it so.
Yeah.
And some people might say, well, what's the big deal? I would say do the crime stats.
Do the?
Crime stats.
Do
collect
the crime
them.
Stats.
Mm-hmm. Collect them.
Let's go to our next caller. I think we've raised some points, so let's go to the next caller. Good morning, and thank you for waiting.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to give an example of how the left lies about history
uh-huh.
to further its cause. And this is a very important example that you made. The reason that James Madison and the boys made slaves
three-fifths
of a man was to limit the power of the South, because they did not want the South to have enough power to force other states to be slave states.
Yes, but
so it wasn't because they were racist.
Right.
Actually, and that wasn't my illusion. My illusion had nothing to do with that at all. I was making a wicked joke about proportional representation. But the truth of the matter is, you got it slightly backwards. It was actually a concession, if I'm not mistaken, because the southern states lacked the population density.
Well, yes, they did. But see, if they would have counted slaves, then they would have had more population, which would have given them more power.
You know what's ironic about this whole point is the fact that we're talking about human beings and say whether
uh-huh.
they're three-fourths or two-thirds.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't it have made sense, whether you are the right or the left, to say that these are human persons
uh-huh.
Who deserve human rights, and perhaps we should have counted them as full human persons
uh-huh.
and granted them the same human rights as others?
And I didn't see the conservative element asking for that. So,
well,
if you want to frame it in terms of liberal or progressive lies versus conservative or right-wing lies, consider the fact that neither considered us as human beings.
Look at it this way. At the time this country was being founded, it was a miracle it became a country. They barely made it. These people needed the South. If they didn't have the South...
Which people is that?
The people who form this government.
Uh-huh.
The people who form this government, without the South, there would have never been a nation. We would still be a colony.
Without the millions of slaves, we would not be a nation. This is a very strange conversation for me to listen to.
I don't think that's quite, in defense of the caller, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, I don't think that's what he was saying. I think he was saying that they needed the South, not the slaves per se. You know, we're not getting into that part. And I'm going to give you like 30 seconds to straighten this out.
Okay.
Go.
Yeah, it was they needed the South as a whole. They needed the South because if they didn't have the South to go along with the new Constitution, then they would have been part of England.
Who would have been part of England?
The nation would have never been founded. And they were hoping that eventually slavery would end.
Uh-huh.
That was their goal, was to, but to get, but the main goal was to get the nation started, and they knew that eventually, and it did, when Lincoln understood.
Okay, dude, right about now you dug a hole and you're out of time.
All right.
Okay.
Rosa Parks, where are you when we need you?
Please, Rosa, stand up. You know, I mean, I'm trying to get what he's saying, and I'm trying to parse out some of these because, you know, we've got a really weird organic hole going on here. On one hand, like you said, well, you know, we needed the South as a whole, the entire population, to agree with the framework that allowed us to be a country and secede as a colony from Britain. And what are your thoughts on that?
No, I think it's a very sound intellectual argument that, mm-hmm. that can be made.
Mm-hmm.
But what comes back to me
mm-hmm.
is that this argument is made with no regard to the millions of people
mm-hmm.
Who built this country and disregarded them. So, you know, we could, whether we say two-thirds or three-fifths, we don't even know. We would say that they don't count. And something about that disturbs me.
Well, you know, and here's my thought on this. You can't really parse it out. And just for the sake of trying to clarify what I thought I grasped as his point and my reason for having to support at least that one little aspect of his argument. But it's kind of like a tapestry. If it has one loose thread that can be pulled and unravel it, then it's not whole cloth. You know, the argument doesn't stand. It's not, what's the word we used when I was a nurse? Patent. It's not, it's porous. It won't hold anything. And so and that's the point that you make. It's like, it doesn't matter what side you were on. The fact that you had millions of people who were not counted as people discounts all the rest of that. It colors it, for sure. I mean, hey, what can I say? It colors it. That's my perception.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, and thank you for waiting.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem.
Good morning, and peace to you today.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to personally thank the Honorable Louis Farrakhan for getting my heart beating again.
Uh-huh.
The more than the millions more march has given me hope and optimism that uh-huh. I have not had in years. And I am absolutely overjoyed.
And so what ways were you inspired, and what do you hope to accomplish with this newfound hope and inspiration?
The Reverend, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan has shown us clearly how systemic racism in the United States of America hurts all of us. It hurts blacks and whites and Latinos, and it brings us down as a nation. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is hang together as people, no matter what our skin tone is,
mm-hmm.
and we have to stand together, and we have to build a nation.
Mm-hmm.
We have to build a nation that's open to everybody, who takes everybody's contribution seriously. The slaves who built this country were never ever compensated for their efforts and for their work, and never ever recognized for their contribution and for what they did. In my history class when I was coming up, the only thing I ever knew about the Afro-American contribution was that George Washington Carver found 101 things to do with a peanut.
You know, my mom says the same thing. You must have had the same history book.
I think so. Mm-hmm. think so. So it is time for us to stand up. It is time for us to stand shoulder to shoulder, and it is time for us to say to the government of the United States of America that systemic racism is unacceptable in our society and unacceptable in our culture because it hurts all of us.
Okay, and although your time is almost up, I want to hear one thing personally that you're going to do.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
November 2nd, which is Tuesday, is a National Day of Strike. I am not going to purchase anything on that day. I am going to go down to Pioneer Square, that I hope will be filled with ordinary people and students, and stand shoulder to shoulder, and express my revulsion about what this country is doing to us.
Okay, and
that's what I'm going to do.
And will you be there alone, or will there be a group?
I hope there'll be a billion people there.
Mm. Okay.
It's my hope.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very, very much. Have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. It is 8:30 a.m. Actually, 8:30, not 9:30. At 9 on the Old Mo Variety Hour, the Old Mo celebrates Halloween with a commentary by Tom Becker exploring the history of the pagan holiday. Bill Resnick will interview Greg Smith about educational reform and different approaches taken by the right and the left. Bill is right there. I'm looking at him doing his research, so that should be great. Movie Mo's Jan Hocken and Denise Morris exchange views on the film Capote and debate the film's commitment to exploring truth and memory in Capote's writing of In Cold Blood.
Okay.
At 10 on HealthWatch, Dr. David Naiman speaks with Mary Shaman, author of Living Well with Graves' Disease and Hypothyroidism. At 10:30, Scott Forrester hosts EarthWatch, and at 11 on Democracy Now!, more on Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito, and an interview with former CIA agent Larry Johnson. Didn't he used to be a basketball player? Another. About
no, that, his name was Bird.
Oh, okay.
Not to be confused with the saxophone player.
Okay. But the former CIA agent, Larry Johnson, is going to talk about Karl Rove, who I think he still has a job right now, doesn't he?
Well, if he's not, he's on the book somewhere.
And more on the legacy of Rosa Parks.
All right. Good deal.
So let's go to our next caller. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Hey, I was just calling to, I keep hearing the, I don't know if he's right wing or what he is, but the fellow that was arguing about two-thirds or three-fifths of a person.
Right.
It just seems incredible to me that he reminds me of the people who drive beater cars that have George Bush stickers on the back.
And you wonder, how could they possibly believe that?
Well, yeah, how could you possibly believe, it seems to me you guys were talking a lot about what was going on then, but the bottom line was, he was probably represented at the time about as much as the slaves were. It was the white aristocracy.
Right.
That voted and had any say or power. So, it seems, to me anyway, if he's listening, just want him to know, to me it sounds like he gets his talking points from whoever he listens to on the radio and then goes on these weird tirades about something that's totally irrelevant because, as we find today, we have about as much say in the government that's going on in Washington, D.C. today as we did then.
You know, you're echoing the caller. We have a gentleman that calls in that has a little bit of a difficulty with his speech. You repeated almost verbatim what he said.
Right. I love that
mm-hmm.
guy. He's hard to understand, but he's right on most of the time. And,
yep.
You know, that's all I got to say.
Well, thanks.
I appreciate what you guys are doing, and, you know, carry on.
All righty. Thanks for your call.
Thank you for your call. And also, I just want to make a comment in terms about that caller who's talking about three-fourths and two-thirds and
three-fifths and
three-fifths.
Other and proportional representation.
You know, and I think he has had many points. It's just that occasionally it gets to, I reach a point where we're talking about people, and it's not an intellectual discussion, and so I got a little bit concerned. So
you know what's interesting, just to interject, we have a lot of revisionism going along on all spectrums, you know, all gradients of the spectrum of politics and political ideologies. But and one of the things that disturbs me, though, is that when I hear how things were, I'm supposed to be dispassionate about it, like you said. I'm not supposed to inject any idea of how wrong that was because After all, that's just the way it was, and we had to accept it. And that kind of thinking can lead you to believe that that's the way it should be now, you know. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with you getting upset and dyspeptic about it. I kind of feel the same way, you know. People think that we're supposed to, as a person of color, as a person who has a black ancestry, that we're supposed to kind of like take that dispassionately and, you know, have an intellectual, you know, and detached discussion about it. But ask yourself, how dispassionate can you be about anything that you believe is wrong, even if you're talking about it in terms that of the events that happened even before you were born? If it's wrong, it's wrong. You should not have to be disengaged about it, even if it happened in the past, millennia ago. It's still wrong, right?
Still wrong.
So, you know, we're only human beings.
Yeah, that's true. A caller mentioned about November 2nd.
Right.
The one who mentioned about...
Oh, you got some context for us.
And, of course, it's the world can't wait to hold... It's, quote, the world can't wait, end of quotation. To hold rally at Pioneer Square on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2005. No, serious.
Mm-hmm.
The Portland chapter of the World Can't Wait announced this morning that a rally will be held at 12 noon on Wednesday, November 2nd at Pioneer Square in downtown Portland. This rally joins similar rallies all across America in over 40 cities. The World Can't Wait calls for those who wish to express their unwillingness to follow the Bush regime to take off work or school on November 2nd, 2005, to come together peacefully and express their demands for a new direction in America. To learn more about the World Can't Wait and their goals, please go to www.worldcantwait.org. So tomorrow, a rally at 12 noon.
No, sponsor. Not tomorrow. Didn't it say November, September 2nd?
Yes, November 2nd.
I said September.
Wednesday, November 2nd.
Look, November 2nd, the 11th month of the year, the second day of that month. You know, when they interrupt the calendar, that like jogs and messes up my whole conceptual flow here. Mm-hmm. I know the day is October 31st. Okay.
So last day of the month.
Last day of the month.
The first day of the work week.
First day of the work week. And the clock got set back at some point. You know, I'm not flowing good today. I'm trying.
Well, I know our caller is flowing well, so let's go to that caller. Good morning.
Good
Thank
morning.
You for waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. Is that
Hello.
Joanne's voice I hear?
No, it's not.
Who is this?
This is Celeste.
Celeste?
Mm-hmm.
Hi. This is Christiane. I think we've probably talked before. You're... Voice sounds very familiar. I've called in several times talking about racial inequality in Portland and what
mm-hmm.
we can do to change the system.
Is your radio turned on by any chance?
All that. Is it?
If it is, turn it down. We're getting a weird echo.
Really?
Yeah.
No, my radio is in another room.
Speakerphone?
Okay, maybe that's it. Go ahead.
You might be getting a weird echo because I'm calling from a mental ward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling from Adventist Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being held here on a 5-day hold over a domestic dispute,
mm-hmm.
which I'm now fighting with lawyers about. And the reason I'm calling, which I thought might be germane to what's going on in the civil rights movement in Portland today, is that I just heard on the radio something that we have discussed, me and Joanne and Alan Graf
uh-huh.
had a discussion about racial inequality in Portland as a reflection of Katerina, et cetera.
Right.
And I just heard on the radio that the citizens of Lake Oswego
mm-hmm.
or Lake No Negro, as I say in my house.
Yes.
That they have issued basically a German spotlight game warning for the entire city tonight.
What is that?
In which everyone who wants to dress up like a monster or a ghoul is going to chase anyone within city limits. This sounds like a very frightening game to me.
Where did you hear this?
I just heard this on this radio.
What station did you hear that?
I don't even know what station. It's one of the country stations.
Okay, well, if you can get some more information,
I'll get more information, but I had a great idea for any civil rights activists that want to, like, get in on this big game of German spotlight that's been put on, basically, for Halloween night. To round up all your horses and covered wagons like it's 1863 and surround the city of Lake No Negro.
Okay, well, we're doing some investigation about that, and if we have any more information, we'll share it.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for calling.
Yeah, and hey, you know what? I'm also the one that called in about Alan moving down to the farm. And I'm a journalist who's being squashed right now. So I just want to say, like, I am literally being, like, held in a mental facility because of things that I'm trying to write. I'm an investigative journalist.
Okay, I assume you have advocates and those.
With an editor at the Boston Globe that's waiting to hear from me.
Okay, well, I assume that you have advocates who are there working on your behalf, so I hope things work out.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and hopefully I'll be back in to volunteer again at KBOO. Just wanted to give you a heads up of what's going on here this morning.
All right.
This is real, and I'm going to court with my family tomorrow.
Okay, well, thanks for your call.
Okay?
Thank you.
I went online and I couldn't find anything about German spotlight.
Okay.
So I was going to check one other quick source here.
Okay, well, in the meantime, we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Well.
It's Monday and we're hanging in there. How about yourself?
For real. Well, I'm hanging in there too. I'm a little bit, like, worked up about what gentleman said a few callers ago. We can call him the two-thirds, three-fifths man, whatever he needs to be called as. I am a white female, I'm lesbian, and whatever that means, that's not what I'm talking about, but I get very upset when people just try to tell us that when the liberal media is being misrepresented. He just brought up so many points, I'm a little bit hyper about it, but I was thinking a lot about the history before the United States, and when people were in... Like when New Amsterdam Company founded, when people came from Europe and went to Africa and first started stealing people, do you think they were thinking that they were going to stop doing this when this trend started, that they were going to stop and that they weren't racist and they weren't thinking about, the human rights aspect of this guy's thing has just really got me flaring. And so basically what I want to send out to that guy and to us all is a big fat blessing that we can find some truth and that if white people and all people got to say some stupid racist shit to, stuff to expose their own inherent, exactly what the other guy said after that, systemic racism, and we have to expose it, well then, bring it up so we can evolve. I hope that that's what's going on. I'm putting a lot of prayer into that's what's going on, that if I, as a white person, have systemic racism in me, need to bring it up and raise it up so I can recognize it to deteriorate it, so I don't have to move on in that step anymore. I hope we can all move in that direction. And I just wanted to say that.
Hey, thanks for calling.
All right. People of your tribe, rise up. Peace.
Okay. I think one thing that the last caller made that I think is helpful is a suggestion that all of us a call to look and examine our own lives and to interrupt not only racism but injustice that we are a part of individually or corporately. We all are responsible. And so it isn't that anyone has all the answers or that anyone is correct all the time, but as a community we can hold one another accountable and do so in a way in which we build community and construct a society where all are welcome and where all individuals and persons are honored and respected. You are listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. Coming up at 10 is the OMO Variety Hour. Stay tuned for that conversation. At 10:30 is Health Watch. At 10:30 is Earth Watch. And at 11 a.m. is Democracy Now! There will be some more conversation about the Supreme Court nominee, Samuel Alito. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and we invite you to give us a call if you have a comment or a announcement to make about things that are happening here. We mentioned several things that are happening or that have happened in the past week. It seems as if many people are certainly in the United States are becoming much more critical of the president and his administration, not only about his war policy, but also in terms of domestic policy. Recent polling has shown the president at a very low 39% approval rate, and it's interesting times we're living in. Whether or not we can respond to it creatively remains to be seen. In the meantime, we'll go to our next caller. If you have a comment, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, caller, and thank you for waiting.
Hello?
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Constitution or the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've read, actually seen the original documents, some of them, and my impression of the people, the founding fathers, when you compare them to the way things are now, that they were illiterate. They had limited education. Their writings was their thoughts was incomplete. A lot of misspelled words. I don't know if you ever read original documents by those guys, but I came away feeling that right today we're being regulated by a thought process or a group of people that by today's standard was illiterate.
Mm.
And I don't know why people don't even grasp that. Another thing, too, is that when you talk about racism, the way things were then, the way things now, racism has evolved, and slavery still exists. We're economic slaves nowadays.
Yes.
And so slavery's still with us. What scares me, really, is that we live in a society where animals, dogs and cats, are more elevated to a higher level than African Americans, where you had a guy spending $1 million or something,
mm-hmm.
flying animals out of Louisiana, and left people back there because he thought animals was more important. Mm-hmm. That's what scares me.
You know, I was at a community forum. I think on Thursday we're talking about Hurricane Katrina, and I heard Joyce Harris gave a very insightful commentary about what's happening with particularly African-Americans, especially those who found their way here to Portland. And one thing she said that stuck with me was, remember how when the flood happened, they moved all those people to the
Superdome.
And she equated that to a slave ship in mm-hmm. terms of how they just forced people in there, how they had
no infrastructure,
no plumbing.
No support services, nothing.
And just the whole moving of people away from their original home, they're moving them out and transporting them. I think that we are looking at slavery, economic or otherwise, in a new way, and that we have a lot to go for our society to get its act together.
Well, that's true. And the thing about it is, when I listen to even sympathizers, that are Caucasians and all, they sympathize and they probably agree with us intellectually or disagree with the way we're treated intellectually, but it don't go no further than the intellectual part. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go all the way to the very core. How much are they willing to change things? And when I look back, every time I mention that if everybody was tired of George Bush and his thing, that we'd come together and strike, and people say, well, that's not going to work. But if you look at Rosa Parks, for example, and that whole movement, they was able to bring down an institution by striking. And that seems to me to be the roadmap, nonviolently, to bring this thing down, but nobody is that committed.
Go ahead, Cesar.
I was just thinking, you mentioned that movement in 55 and 56, and, we pass over it so lightly now. But just thinking in terms of the organizing skill and the commitment of a whole community
mm-hmm.
To maintain that pressure for a whole year in face of economic and physical repression.
Right.
I don't know if we could even do something for a week here.
But you know something? I have to go back and pull a quote from Frederick Douglass. Since we all agree that we're still basically in slavery today, Frederick Douglass said, what do it look like for a slave to die a natural death? You know what I'm saying? We all want to die a natural death, and yet we're in slavery. It doesn't make sense. No slave. What do a slave look like dying of old age? It's time to go on and get down, man. That's just my thinking, man, because it's only going to get worse.
So in terms of your personal politics, tell us one thing that you do to basically support your philosophy and how somebody else can feel supported by you. I mean, tell us one thing that you do.
Agitate and instigate.
Anything else? I mean, I'm talking about a personal action. Agitate and instigate is good, but...
Okay, I'll tell you a personal action that I've done.
Just one.
I went to this bookstore up on Killingsworth,
mm-hmm.
to O.V., whatever that guy's name, O.V. Hill, O.V. something other.
O.V. Hill.
Right, and talked to him about making, what can we do to make KBMS more relevant?
Mm-hmm.
And get away from all, just, you know, 99% of what they do is play music. We need more like what you guys have at Cable. We need more of that at KBMS because we need to get the message out, first of all, for young black guys to quit volunteering going in the military. What, you know, why should you go and support administration that don't care nothing about you?
Yeah.
We need, you know, and so that's one thing that I've been working on. And he's
okay.
other people that feel the same way I do. KBMS, which you guys, Cecil, you and Celeste, you guys should be working hard to make that station more relevant because how many black people listen to that station?
Well, you know, it sounds like you have the time and energy, and I would suggest that you approach them directly.
I tried to call them directly.
No, I didn't say call. I didn't write them a letter. Write them more letters. Get a letter-writing campaign going.
And, you know, one last thing before I go. Some guy mentioned that Portland was really bad. It really is bad because I'm going to tell you what's the really apparent about the racism that exists in Oregon. You can look out and see that there's no middle-class black community. Actually, the poor black community is disintegrating.
Well, I have to beg to differ. It may not be visible, but it most definitely is here. It's just not visible.
No. Nah. No.
You mean like a neighborhood?
Yeah, like a neighborhood, you know, right.
Yeah.
There's not a neighborhood per se. There's a few folks together, but it's not that much of the population. We don't comprise enough of the population.
And what you guys need to do, man, is you guys need to try to contact KXL.
No, sir. Sir, we spend our time putting this show together. You should do that.
Y'all need to debate Lars Larson.
It sounds like you would be a great candidate. You know, I'm always amazed when people tell me I should do something extra beside what I'm doing. And I want to challenge the people who have these ideas, do it and show me some success. And I'll back you.
See, we need. Wait a minute.
But caller, I'm sorry, you're out of time.
We need to show a united front.
I said I'd support you.
They're listening, so we need to show a united front.
I said I'd support you.
All right.
All righty. Bye bye.
If you're listening to KBOO Portland, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we've been talking this morning about some things that have been happening in our nation and in our city. For those of you who are unaware, the president has nominated a new justice for the Supreme Court, Samuel Alito, who is a true blue conservative. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We have a couple of callers left in a few minutes, so we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning. Thank you for your passion, for taking my call. I wanted to share a couple of thoughts. I heard Amy Goodman describe the media, particularly alternative media and indie media, as a huge kitchen table in which we discuss war and peace. And I think we have to really encourage one another and urge that these central questions of war and peace be in the forefront. The second point. There are important conservatives who are now railing against the cabal.
Mm-hmm.
Brzezinski and Lawrence Wilkerson, and the latter was a former chief of staff for Colin Powell.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
they have criticized this secret government between Cheney and Rumsfeld, which put together decisions which the other parts of government weren't even aware of. Wilkerson also very strongly condemned the Congress for its failure in its control capacity. I think that's a very important criticism, because I think the branches really need to be reconfigured.
When you say reconfigured, what do you mean?
Well, the branches have fallen to this neoliberal mythology of profit maximization.
Okay, and so you would do, I mean, because I'm with the short time, I want to see if I can just nail it. Are you saying that we need to give them extra powers? We should revitalize them to do what they originally planned to do, or some kind of way modify the powers that they have?
Well, we have to, I think, plead for the fourth and fifth branches, the branches of public opinion and alternative media.
Okay.
As a way of identifying and eliminating the abuse of power.
Okay.
The corruption through special interests. It seems like the government is a trough for special interests. And our work is to try to make the government into a social state. That's my, my perspective.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
You know, we cannot play down the importance of the media. And, you know, and to go back to the brother who called earlier, I appreciate what he's saying with regard to bring enlightenment to other media. You know, personally, I want to make KBOO strong. You know, it's not that I don't believe that he's got a point, you know, and his point is the same as the caller made before. It's like, make sure that we, you know, we get other media facilities to stand up and tell the truth. However, I got one right now, and it makes more sense to keep this one strong and work hard on this one than it does to branch out right now, because I'm one person. But I want to challenge other people who do have the time and do have the passion, that if you really believe in your idea that other media facilities and outlets need to step up to the plate and be more honest and be more responsive and responsible, letter writing campaigns are a powerful thing.
And we have about 45 seconds for the next caller. If you can say it in 45 seconds, we'll take your call. Sorry for...
I'll give you a whole minute.
Good morning, caller.
Thank you. We must stop using the word racism when we're referring to color supremacy. That whole discourse you had this morning about 2/3, 3/5, 1/16, that was about color and how the color of one group of people is inferior, makes them inferior beings compared to people of the other group. In terms of what I could do, if you had asked me that question, well, what is it you do? What I do is, and what I know that we all could do, if only we would take responsibility for it, is search ourselves and see what it is we know. You know, and I know that I know more black white supremacists, I said no, not know about, than I do white supremacists. And all of us, regardless of color, need to come to the point where we can sit our children down. You don't have to leave your house, you know, and this would practically solve the problem, and say, look, I know that you have seen and heard me do and say things that indicated that certain groups of people, based upon their color, are inferior to me, to us. But that is not correct. And I want you to know that in this family, beginning today, that will stop. If every head of family or member of family would discuss that directly and clearly with love and respect amongst each other, then the problem would begin to dissipate. Colin Powell.
We, sir, I'm really sorry. We are out of time.
Okay,
they are knocking
you
at the door. Thank you so much. It's a great note to end on. We all have our sphere of personal influence, And so when you have this passion that you have, and as the caller said, with precision, first make known what our errors are and correct them, but also spread your passion. Letter writing campaigns are a wonderful thing. And don't forget about the rally, November 2nd, Pioneer Square. And what time is that?
It's at 12 noon. The world can't wait.
The world can't wait, so don't stop.
Hey,
we'll hear you
listening.
Next week.